Welcome to Parents' Perspective. A single mom was teaching her daughter to drive. She felt strongly about having her spend a few quick seconds checking out the car before she left the driveway, the lights, the seatbelt, the amount of gas in the tank, and of course the mirrors. As they climbed in the car and her daughter turned on the ignition one day, her mom inquired, "Wait a minute, did you check the mirrors?" Her daughter replied, "Don't worry, Mom, my hair's just fine." On a serious note, teens are an exceptionally dangerous group on the road. They are more likely to be distracted, fatigued, and take risks. On the road, that's a lethal combination. From a parent's perspective, what can we do to prevent future tragedies and promote teen safety on our roads? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is Phil Birardelli, a journalist with more than 35 years of experience. He has covered such topics as energy, science, education, and popular culture, as well as highway safety. His work has appeared in many newspapers and magazines. He's been an editor with McGraw-Hill, Time Life, and United Press International. His background also includes several years as a middle school teacher and 6 years as producer and co-host of a weekly television program, The Movie Going Family. Phil is the author of Safe Young Drivers, a guide for parents and teens. He has 2 grown daughters and 4 grandsons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Phil.
Thank you, Linda.
What's the most important thing for teenage drivers to remember?
Well, as you said in my bio, I've been doing this for quite a while, 15 years, in fact, and what I've learned is that teens don't remember anything about this topic. Teens only are anxious to get the keys and get into the car and get out and go with their friends. It's the parents that need to remember everything that's important about this process, and it is extremely important. And I want to thank you for having me on this show to tell you what I've learned in those 15 years about this topic. I think what I'd like to start with is by making a small comparison, that in this country, we have concentrated for the past 5 years on the casualties we've lost in the Iraq War. And I think every citizen in this country is aware of how many of our soldiers we have lost in that war. But when I talk to parents and I ask them during that same time if they know how many teenagers we've lost on our highways, very few people know that. Now, we all know it's about 4,000 soldiers, 4,100 in Iraq. But very few of us know that it was 33,000 teenagers that we lost on our highways during the same time. And then what I do when I talk with parents is I ask them to consider, what is a death on the highway? Isn't it just as sudden and violent and terrible as any death in combat? So we have a battleground here at home that we never talk about as a nation, and it's very serious. And any parent with a teen who has approached the driving age needs to understand this basic fact. This is a life and death issue concerning your precious child. And that's where I think they should start to consider what they have to do.
The other statistic, which I assume you probably have, which is also just as heartbreaking, is what happens to those teens who don't get killed, but whose lives are forever destroyed, either because they're the driver that killed somebody else by accident, or they're somebody who suffered brain damage or paralysis or whatever it is. There must be terrible statistics about that, too.
There are terrible statistics. There are tens of thousands of teens who are injured every year seriously. The best way that I think to consider it is about one teen per high school dies every year, and about one teen per classroom is injured seriously every year. Now, that is a statistic, again, that I think bears the utmost attention of a parent whose teen is ready to drive. The thing that I've always been amazed by is that any parent knows that if a child comes to that parent and says, "Mom, Dad, I'd like to play the piano," or "I'd like to play a saxophone or whatever, the parent would never consider saying to that child, well, I'll pay for 6 lessons and then I expect you to be absolutely perfect. Or if a child comes and says, I want to play a competitive sport, I want to play soccer or basketball, baseball, football, the parent would never say, after 6 practices, I expect you to be a champion. Parents understand, and they never question the idea that it will take years, not just weeks, but years of practice and intense study to become proficient at these activities. But then after 16 years of raising a child and caring for that child and protecting that child, we seem to be satisfied as a society for giving them 6 hours of instruction behind the wheel and then the keys to the car. And then off they go, often with a carload of their friends. And we wonder why a 16-year-old is 12 times more likely to die than any other age group on the highways. This is also the situation that we're facing. It takes a great deal of time to become a driver because you can't think your way on the highway. You have to sense it. It's like any other activity. You have to transfer the process from your conscious brain to your subconscious brain. You have to act reflexively. And the training involves the same kind of training that is for any other activity. It's repeated exposure to situations so that they become automatic. Dealing with them becomes automatic. When NASA was first training the astronauts to go into space, they tried to recreate the conditions in space and continue to subject the astronauts to those conditions so that they'd understand what they were experiencing. We have to do the same thing with our children. I wrote this book, Safe Young Drivers, so that parents can take their children through that entire process, because what it requires is starting from a position of safety. You don't start on a superhighway. You don't start in a complex situation. You start in a place where you feel comfortable and the teen feels comfortable. You start in an empty parking lot and you start moving around very slowly, because the things that you take for granted behind the wheel, your teen is just beginning to experience and they need time. Turning the wheel is something that we all feel is natural. If you remember when you just started, it didn't feel very natural. So you start slowly and then you add situations of increasing complexity depending upon how well the teen responds to those situations. And if you do that and you do that long enough, what you can do is make them a good basic driver.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teen driving.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Phil Berardelli about teenage drivers. What do you think is the biggest challenge for adolescent drivers? It sounds like they have a lot.
They do have a lot. And the problem with adolescent drivers is, going back to the astronauts in the beginning of the space program were former test pilots. And test pilots had a particular attitude that they were invincible, that if anything happened to those around them, which happened quite often, that those people were inferior. And teens tend to have the same kind of an attitude. Well, it happened to so-and-so, or I see this crash on television, or as some high schools will do, they'll bring a wrecked automobile and display it, thinking that the teens will look at it and say, well, I better be careful because that might happen to me. Teens don't think that way. So the biggest challenge for teens, I think, is to understand that what their parents and what legal society is about to impose on them is for a reason. It's for their protection. That's about the most you can expect teens to carry with them. Everything else, and what I have been preaching for 15 years, is that parents must take control of this process and parents must supervise their kids all the way through 16 is not a magic age. I mean, if you listen to your teenager, you wouldn't think so. But 16 is no magic age. You don't have the right to drive at 16. You may drive if your parent allows you to drive. One of the best laws in our country, and it's in every state, is that nobody under 18 may drive unless the parent takes an overt act and signs the permission. Parents and teens come into conflict a lot over all kinds of things like clothing and body piercing and music and friends. And a lot of times the parents will lose the argument. But this is a time where the teen has no authority. The parent has complete authority. And I think parents need to exercise that authority because of the seriousness of this situation. You can't guarantee, no matter what you do, you cannot guarantee the safety of your child on the road. I know of stories of teens who have been killed sitting in their cars. By the very act of being in this environment, you take risks. But what you don't want to do as a parent is you don't want to expose them needlessly to risks. You want to lower the risks as much as possible. You want to give them the beginning tools. Now, I would argue this cannot be done in a few hours. This takes a couple of years. So in the states where 16 is the legal driving age, that is the time to begin learning and then take the 2 years. And the other thing that I think parents should do that is very, very important is if you feel in your bones as a parent that your 16-year-old is not ready to get on the road, then you make them wait. You be the parent in this situation. And I speak from experience here. One of my children I did not feel was ready at 16, and so I made her wait until she was 18. And it was a very difficult time for the both of us, but I made her wait. And then when she was 18, we started the lessons. We took almost a year for her to get her license. She got her license. She went out within the first year, and she had 3 at-fault crashes. Fortunately, they were minor, but I felt at that time that I was right. I felt vindicated at the time that I was right not to allow her to drive at 16. She was not ready, and I made her wait. Other parents should do the same. The parent must be in charge. If you've spent 16 years protecting and loving your child, spend another 2 and try to keep them safe.
We have that in our family when my niece and nephew, who are now teenagers, 17 and 18, were little. My sister-in-law started saying, well, they're not going to drive till they're 18. I'm not going to allow it. And I just quietly waited. We all just waited, and now they're teenagers. And she did not allow them to learn to drive until my nephew's now learning to drive at 18. And it makes so much sense. Now, she didn't know what her kids were going to be like at 16.
I think that's an excellent approach. I don't know if you two know this, but the United States is one of the few countries in the world that allows people under 18 to drive. In most other countries, you have to be 18, and the requirements are much more rigorous than they are here. It would seem counterintuitive because we have this automotive society. We have 100 million vehicles and 200 million drivers, and yet we spend so little time training ourselves. You know, when I wrote this book, it's a book about teaching driving. And to research a book about teaching driving, you have to figure out what is it that needs to be taught. So I started observing intensely the driving process, and I started observing other drivers. And what I saw shocked me. We are a nation that really does not take driving seriously. We have one rule on the road, and that is get out of my way, basically. Let me ask you something. I ask parents something when I give my talks. Would you define a speed limit for me?
Oh, isn't that interesting? It depends on where you are, right?
The speed limit is the fastest you can go in a certain area.
That's what everybody says.
And people think it's the baseline.
It's the baseline. It's the slowest speed you can go without being run off the road. And if anybody ever doubts this, try going 5 or 10 miles an hour under the speed limit and see what people start doing. Speed limits have become the absolute reverse in this country.
It
Scary.
And most law enforcement agencies don't even bother drivers if they're going less than 10 miles over the speed limit. It's become so pervasive. And in my personal observation, more than 9 out of 10 drivers, more than 90 out of 100 drivers speed all the time, not just on the highways. They speed in their back streets. I live in Northern Virginia, and the street I live on has 7 stoplights in a row. And I often walk down to the post office or I walk to the shopping center to do things, and I'm walking back home and I watch the traffic, and it's always the same. The light turns green, and what happens? Everybody floors it, and they're off and running, and they're passing and they're weaving. And where do they end up? At the next light a few hundred yards down the road. And they stop, and they start it again when the light turns green. I've been passed by people on their way to a stop sign, or I've been passed by people on their way to a red light. And sometimes I just, every once in a while, I would like to roll down my window when I pull up next to them and say, so did you get where you were going in such a hurry? But we become encultured this way, that you have to go fast, and even when there's no payoff to it. If you see a highway sign that says congestion ahead, do you ever see people slowing down at the highway sign? They will go full bore until they have to stop. This is somewhat tangential to our topic, but I mention it because it's the kind of society that we're in. And this is the environment into which we're placing our precious, beloved children. Now, do we really want to do that as parents?
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teen drivers.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Phil Burardelli about safe young drivers. What kinds of guidelines, besides talking about age, besides taking longer than the 6 hours kinds of training, what other kinds of guidelines do you think parents should give to their kids who are learning to drive and then brand new drivers?
Well, let's take it in a few steps. The first step, as I said, is parents have to take control of this process, and that includes deciding when and if the teen is ready to drive. Now, the problem is if formal education programs provide 6 hours and experts think teens need at least 100 hours of supervised instruction, where is that instruction going to come from? There really is no other party better suited than the parent. I mean, who takes a better interest in the child? And I would even argue that it's a great positive experience for you to get in that vehicle in the passenger seat with your child and spend that 100 hours or more, because it's a rebonding experience. I find that pre-teenagers are stretching the limits. They're testing their independence. When my kids were young, they never liked it when I drove them somewhere. They always liked it when I stopped 100 yards away from where they were going, so they didn't have to be seen coming out of the car with Dad. So this is an opportunity. They have to go through this with you because you've made the rule. They have no choice. So it can be a rebonding experience. You can start to recognize their budding adulthood, and they can start seeing you as a human being again. The times that I spent with my girls when I was teaching them how to drive are among the best times we ever had. So it's a win-win situation. You give them a better start. You show them that you're concerned by making this commitment, and you become closer to your child. So what could be better than this?
How do you recommend that teens learn their driving skills? Do you think that they should go through the courses that are given and then spend time in addition with their parents, or how do you think that all should work?
I think it can go either way depending on the situation. My general recommendation is do the parental instruction first and then put them through the formal courses. My one child, as I said, waited until 18, so it wasn't necessary to take the formal course. But my other child did go through, and what she told me was, "Dad, I learned almost nothing through this course. You already taught me everything." Now, that wasn't technically true. There are important things that you can learn, and I don't want to denigrate the competence or dedication of professional driving instructors. There are some fine people out there, and I hear from them periodically. But really, they give a good basic understanding, and they start to teach the rules of the road, which are also important. And that is something that needs to be learned as well. But in terms of exposing the teen to all those situations over those hours, it has to be the parent. There really can't be anybody else. And that's why I wrote the book, if you'll permit me this little commercial, is to take them through the process.
Phil, are there things parents often do or do not do that are poor influences on our teenage drivers?
Well, any parent who thinks that they haven't been teaching their teenage driver for 16 years is mistaken. Those kids have been watching you and whatever you do. So if you speed all the time, if you roll through stop signs, if you cheat on red lights, they're watching this. If you're exchanging words and gestures with other drivers, they're watching this. You've been teaching them all along. And sometimes parents ask me about this. I know I haven't done well. What can I do about this? And I always recommend, be honest, be direct. Say, you know what? I really haven't done as well as I could in this process. So I'm going to teach you, but I'm going to rededicate myself to being a better driver. We're going to go through this process together. And I think that's very important too. And then let me just add that when the license is granted, that's not the end of this process. The first 6 months after a license is the most dangerous time for a teen. That is when they're on their own, and that's when they're most likely to have a crash. So you have got to bear down and not relent. So a number of rules have to be applied, and those rules must have consequences. Rule number one is no passengers for the first 6 months. Teens riding with teens are a recipe with disaster. Some of the worst tragedies on our highways have been caused by cars full of teens. So that is number one, and no riding with a beginning driver either. That's number one. Number two, always wear your seatbelt. Number three, no driving on major highways or high-speed roads for the first 6 months. You need to get your wings. You need to get comfortable in that vehicle before you do this. If you're going to drive on an interstate or a road like that, I will be with you, and I will continue to supervise you. And the last rule, the rule that I always say, if you break it, that's the end. No drinking, no drugs. That is a non-starter. That is a deal breaker. You breach that rule, and your driving days are over until you're an adult and on your own.
The thing I used to worry about when I was a teenager was if I got in a car and then I found that the person who was driving had been drinking, what do you do? What do you tell teenagers?
I think what you tell them is you've got to look out for yourself. So you've got to make sure before you get into that vehicle that the person you're with has not been drinking. And it's very easy to tell. I mean, alcohol is a fairly pervasive odor. If someone has even had one drink, you can usually tell. And if you want to be more careful than that, be with that person the whole time and make sure that that person hasn't taken a drink before you get in the vehicle. That way, you'll know that they haven't gone somewhere else and done some drinking. And then if you feel that you are stuck, you can't get home unless you ride with them, you call me and I'll come and get you. No questions asked. I would rather inconvenience myself and still have you as my child than risk losing you or having you permanently disabled because of one small incident.
Do parents still have contracts with their kids about things like that?
A lot of parents do that. And again, I think it's a matter of personal preference. I think if you think it will help the process, if you think it will help to formalize it, then fine. But I don't think it's necessary in every case.
In addition to your book, Phil, Safe Young Drivers, A Guide for Parents and Teens, what other resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
I have my own website, safeyoungdrivers.com, and there are more resources for parents on there. There are also answers to frequently asked questions, and there's a whole bunch of information, and you can buy the book there. Most insurance companies, and there are a couple that are leaders in the industry, have good teen driving information. So I would check with your insurance company or your insurance agent. And then the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety in Arlington, Virginia, has an excellent battery of information for parents about teen drivers, and I would try them. And also the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. If you try nhtsa.dot.gov, and the Insurance Institute is highwaysafety.org, you can find more information there, plus your insurance agent.
Well, you have given us a lot of information, and I hope to all the parents out there who are beginning this process or are knee-deep in this process, they will take some heart and some insight from what you have given us. So, Phil Birardelli, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Linda and Sandy. Thank you for having me and letting me talk about this topic.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Phil Birardelli's book, Safe Young Drivers, A Guide for Parents and Teens. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 402 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.